Just imagine if one day you went out to dinner and you found yourself seated next to the person who invented the wheel. Or the person who first discovered the idea of putting roofs on buildings. Someone who invented something indispensable to our lives. And there was the person sitting right there at dinner who actually discovered it or invented it. I had that experience this past week. I went to the TED conference in Vancouver earlier this week. Technology, entertainment, design, and all the most important tech people in the world were there. Melinda and Bill Gates were there. Jeff Bezos, who founded Amazon, was there. Many, many, many others. Journalists, thinkers, philosophers. And the first night I went out to dinner with five other people, and sitting to my left was Sir Tim Berners-Lee, who invented the World Wide Web. He did it. At the London Olympics, when they honored two people in the history of English science, the two people they honored were Sir Isaac Newton and Sir Tim Berners-Lee. That's why he's Sir, knighted by the Queen, because he invented the friggin' World Wide Web. And talking to him was fascinating and wonderful. And one of the things he told me was that he had actually invented it almost 2 years before anyone had heard of it. But he sent the memo to the head of his corporation at CERN, who wrote on it, "This is vague, exciting, but vague." So I said to him, "I hope you kept that memo, because you can put your kids through college on that memo if you auction it off." And he said, "Well, it's somewhere in my computer." And then 18 months later, they revisited it. And while other people were working on similar proposals, his was the first, his was the best, and he decided not to patent it. He wanted everyone in the world to have access to all the information in the world, and he insisted on it. And he became the father of the World Wide Web. In fact, the person who introduced him a couple nights later at the party in honor of the 25th anniversary of the World Wide Web was Al Gore, who said, "Here is the real inventor of the World Wide Web." And I bring this up, well, first of all, because it was this week, and I was sitting next to the inventor of the World Wide Web, and I had to tell someone. So that's the first reason I bring it up. But the other reason I bring it up is because of this morning's Parsha. Something very strange happened, and being at the TED conference gave me a different perspective on it. Nadav and Avihu, the two sons of Aaron, offer an Esh Zar, a strange fire before God. In other words, they're at the altar, they're making a sacrifice like everyone else does, and for some reason, much debated among the commentators, they get it wrong and the fire consumes them and they die. Now let me tell you why it is that being at this conference gave me a different perspective on it. The most dramatic moments among many dramatic and beautiful moments at the presentations, and you know if you've never done it, to go online and look up TED Talks, you will find some of the most inspirational and interesting talks in the world from people who are invited year after year to the TED conferences, TED. The most dramatic moment by far was this man who came out who was a professor at MIT. And he is a professor of bionics. He's a mountain climber who lost both his legs to frostbite. And he has two bionic legs that he helped design that are so advanced and effective that he climbs mountains with them. Yeah, exactly. That's what I said too. Exactly that. And he gave a presentation about how they designed bionic legs and how they fit them and bionic limbs and so on and so forth. And then he said, Over the past year, a little bit more, what we've been working on is this woman. He showed a picture of a woman. She's a ballroom dancer, and she was in the Boston Marathon. And she lost her leg in the bombing. And he said, at MIT, in our lab for the past year, we've been trying to design for her a leg that will allow her to do ballroom dancing again. He said, and now, for the first time, here she is to dance. And she came out with a partner, and she danced. And it was exactly astonishing. If there was a person sitting in the audience who didn't have tears in their eyes, they're made of stone. It was remarkable and beautiful and wonderful and an illustration of what technology can do. They brought a 17-year-old up there. He's now 19, but I'd seen him 2 years ago at the TED conference. When he was 17, he invented a new kind of nuclear reactor at 17. By the way, he's not going to college. He got so many contracts and offers and so on that now he's working with all sorts of corporations. But the reality is that the same genius and the same ingenuity and the same technology that creates bionic limbs and the World Wide Web that gives you right now as much information in your pocket if you brought your cell phone, and you don't have to check now, and you don't have to take a picture, although I know it's very hard, I realize, to sit for a couple hours in synagogue and not check. I'm sure someone texted you that unless you respond right now, you'll lose $1 million. But just in case. But the same technology that created that, the cell phone that you're not allowed to take pictures with in the synagogue, that cell phone, the same technology, the same ingenuity also created weaponry. Also created not only nuclear reactors, but a nuclear bomb. Not only enables us to save lives, but enables us to take them. And every time I heard some astonishing advance that was curing disease or helping people, I thought all of this can be wiped out in an instant if we use the technology the wrong way instead of the right way. And the same geniuses I was sitting among, people who started, one of the founders of Google was there. And as I said, the founders of Microsoft were there. And the head of Yahoo was there. And these same people who are so astonishingly gifted, if you just twist that mind a little bit, then they're giving bombs to places like Pakistan and North Korea. And, God forbid, Iran. And I realized that that's part of what the Torah portion was trying to teach us. You can use the same fire to sacrifice to God or to consume yourself. To do something beautiful or wonderful, or to do something destructive and awful. And nothing in the technology itself determines what you do. It's all the values that you bring to the technology. It's all the training that you get. I said to Sir Tim Berners-Lee, how'd you learn to do this stuff? And he said, you know who my inspiration is, and you know who the real founder of the World Wide Web is? My mother. He said, she was one of the first computer programmers, and she taught me programming. It depends who you learn from and what you learn to do with the power that you are given. And everybody sitting there had to be impressed with the fact that our power is growing daily and exponentially. I mean, I know that to some extent we take it for granted. But the fact that in your hand you hold more information than the Library of Congress. You hold more information than any human being at any time in history, and all you have to do is push a couple of buttons, and then you get annoyed when it doesn't respond instantly. That's remarkable and astonishing and scary. Because that same information can be used to enable someone to dance or to fly a plane into a building. And what I want to say is that the Torah is teaching us, and this is an increasingly true lesson, that as we get more powerful, our values become that much more important, that much more crucial. Because without them, the fire will consume us. One of the things that you realize is that every time you're given a tool, especially the most powerful tool, which is that of information, what it does is it magnifies whatever it is you bring to it. It's just like the Talmud says, God leads you in the direction you wish to go, good or bad. So if you look on the internet about how to run a scam, or build a bomb, or create false corporations, all the information is there. All you have to do is look it up. But you could also look on the internet about how to heal people, how to help them, how to do things that are guided by values and not just by information. After Nadav and Avihu, Aaron's two sons, are consumed by the fire, there is a famous line. It says, Vayidom Aharon, and Aaron was silent. He had nothing to say. He could say nothing. What we say in response to the technology we have, that will determine the human future. I really did feel like I was getting a glimpse of the future, but it was only one possible future. In the fire is both warmth and destruction. The first time, according to the Torah, according to the rabbis, the fire was created was when night fell the first night in Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden, and Adam was terrified because he'd never seen night before. And God instructed him to take two stones, Aphelah and Mavet, darkness and death, and rub them together, and something magic would happen. So Adam did. And out of his fears of darkness and death, he made fire. And that, according to the rabbis, was the beginning of fire. It brought into the world destruction, warmth, devastation, possibility, the chance that we would wipe ourselves out, or the chance that we would come increasingly to understand our universe. It's all up to us. I leave you with a story that one of the Hasidic masters used to tell about a boy who came up to the rabbi and said, I'm sure I can ask you a question that you can't answer, which, by the way, kids still do today. When I walk through the schools, I get this sometimes. Rabbi, I have a question for you that I know you can't answer. What's the question, said the rabbi, and the boy said, I have a bird in my hand right now. When I open it, will that bird be alive or dead? And the rabbi said, you're right. I can't answer it. Only you can. Because it's all in your hands. Shabbat shalom.